All right, everybody, welcome to Dojo Talks. Today we are continuing our series talking about the controversial points mentioned in Ben Johnson's Perpetual Chess Improvement. Basically, he's talked to 1,000 different people, coaches, improvers, and which are the points where people had disagreement or wild disagreement. And so we've talked about endgames, for example, before. Today we're going to talk about, i.e., should you learn endgames? Today we're going to talk about the virtues of studying openings and the virtues of playing, or lack of virtues, of playing Blitz online. And so we are going to start with openings, and then we'll go to the Blitz second. Basically, Ben gives us kind of a wishy-washy answer, but let's just put it in a bigger picture scenario. Out there, by far, the most amount of study that's done out there is people studying openings. Might be an interesting question to gauge, like what percentage of chess study out there amongst everyone, what percentage of that is opening study of all the study being done? That's a good question. I'm going to guess, I'm going to go 70 to 80%, which is clearly wrong. And then the question becomes, is it in particular an overrated thing that especially beginners, people under 1500, are doing way too much of? And we've talked a little bit about it on this topic in the past, but we're going to respond to Ben here. Kostya, what do you think?
Yeah, so it seems like, so in Ben's book, he kind of presents both sides, which makes sense. And I think in general, the big fight here, in my view, is that studying openings is fun, and your chess improvement doesn't always, it's not about doing the thing that's going to be the most hardcore, most efficient all the time. I think in general, that's kind of what it boils down to, is you can definitely argue about how useful openings are, but at the end of the day, I think people like studying openings. I mean, I definitely do. It's generally enjoyable for me, and it's easy. It's something that is much easier than having to like solve a difficult problem or study some technical endgame. You can just kind of get like information. You feel like you're learning something. You can immediately implement it. You know, you learn the Jobava London, you can play it tonight, you know, and already get some games with it, right? So, I mean, we'll get into maybe the virtues of it, but I feel like that's kind of what it boils down to. I think everyone agrees for the most part that like, okay, studying openings being super hardcore is not going to be the best thing to do at lower levels. It gets more helpful at higher levels. It also comes down to, for me, I think just how much people want to enjoy what they're studying versus how much they really want to like be hardcore about their improvement. And ultimately my feeling is if you have time for everything, then there's nothing wrong with studying some openings. But if that's like the only thing you're doing, and then you're not working on like your tactics and your middle games and other stuff, then of course that's where we get some serious problems, because you're not working on the important stuff.
Let me question your framing just a tiny bit. So you're framing it as it being like the fun thing, right? But I think that one of the reasons why both of these topics come up, both the openings and the Blitz, is the notion that people might not be doing it just because it's fun, but that they might be doing excess amounts of both of these things, openings and Blitz, because of some kind of weird feeling of needing to do it. You know, some urgy kind of thing that takes over you and you're not even doing what you want to be doing. For example, with openings, because we can try and talk about Blitz later and keep them separate if we can, but with openings, I would say there's some amount of people being afraid that if they don't study the open, they're going to be punished by an opponent who knows more than them. Mm-hmm. And we hear that every time somebody's like, am I allowed to play the Sicilian? I'm 800. Am I allowed to play the Ruy Lopez? I'm only 1100. Do I need to like learn the Italian first because I don't understand positional chess? Right. Et cetera, right? Like, can I play the King's Indian or do I have to start with D4, D5? Also, I can't go to a tournament until I've learned this book, you know, until I've finished my repertoire. I don't yet have my line against the Aliakian memorized. So I've only done E4, E5, the Sicilian, the French, and the Caro. I can't go to a tournament yet. So I think that the question is kind of like, to what extent are people feeling compelled to do some kind of thing that maybe is not only not helpful, but not fun? Because as long as it's fun, I think most people will say, okay, you can spend some more time on that, right? The question is, are we falling under some kind of compunction that's unpleasant? And I would guess that to some extent we are, that some people are. So I don't know if you guys feel that that's an issue or not.
Yeah, and I think to me, it's, we didn't plan it this way, by the way, of doing openings and blitz at the same time, but what they really have in common is both are fundamentally easy. They don't take up, they don't demand at all like a system two thinking. And for example, which you have to do when you're doing calculation or, you know, going over your games or any of the stuff that's a little harder, reading a hard chess book, for example, all of this is going to require, oh man, the caloric burn and just the energy required, right? And that's, you know, philosophy of the dojo, what we think is going to actually make, have people improve. And one of the things, actually, we just changed the opening requirements, the way we score them, right? And before it was a little vague, but now it was kind of like an epiphany moment for me anyways, because it was like, oh, with openings, it's fundamentally like an easy, pleasant task. And therefore, it's the one of the few things where you do need to do it once you're past a certain level, right? Not when you're 1200 or 1100, but it passed a certain level. And because of that, we should score it based on hours spent doing the activity, because it's not something incredibly hard, right? You know, and there's a variety of things you can do while you're studying the opening. We can argue about what's the best form of opening improvement, but it's a fundamentally kind of, as Kostia says, an easy task. It doesn't task you like other things. And Blitz is, and has a lot of similarities there, because it's got that little adrenaline boost that you get. And it just kind of is a time waster, right? That you can occupy your time with. And both of them, opening study and blitz, one of the reasons they're so contentious is we have all known people, ourselves probably included, who have wasted an incredible amount of time doing both of those activities. Mm-hmm. Right.
And yeah, I mean, we'll get to it, but blitz can actively be bad for your chess. Whereas like learning openings, like it can hurt you in some games because you get yourself into some like weird opening, but it's not going to, I don't think it necessarily makes you like a worse player overall. It just might lead you down a straight path. Whereas playing like hours and hours of like bad blitz can build some really bad habits that then are very difficult to break.
So let me like push back a little bit, Kostia. I definitely think harsher. It can hurt you. Okay. We'll talk about blitz, but let me just describe how openings hurt. And this is something I see because I go over a lot of people's games in the dojo who are between zero and 1200, and they're not supposed to be doing openings, but they do it anyway. And I see it in their games. And here's a common example that they're playing the London, and then they play pawn to c3 for no reason at all. Why? Because that's just their little setup. If they had been and followed the dojo rules and been like, no, you're just doing principled openings, they would have never thought to play pawn c3. That thing would have never crossed their mind, right? And then you see other positions. I had a very fascinating one where somebody was playing a King's Indian attack. They clearly got it from some book or something. And sometimes in the King's Indian attack, you play h4, especially if you have the pawn on e5. And this person just blasted out h4, no time spent on the clock. And I was like, oh, right, because they've been studying this as an opening. So it's like the opening study, it really detracts from your ability to think through a lot of situations. And then instead of thinking, you're trying to rely on this external hard drive that you've kind of attached to your head. And it applies to higher rated players too, myself included. I've tried, you know, I've done some wrong moves trying to remember some of Struve's opening theory that I thought I knew, and I was just totally wrong about it as well. So I definitely just want to say there's big negative effects for studying openings.
Yeah, no, actually, I think that's a huge topic that we should talk about, like right now, opening pitfalls, because I think that's a big one. I mean, there's a lot. I mean, a few of the big ones are, let's say, spending a lot of time trying to memorize lines, because you won't remember it long term. You like strong players will attest to this. If you just prep mm-hmm. some random lines for a game, you won't right. remember it past that game. So. Mm-hmm. Especially, I think, for the average player, if you are just drilling random lines on Chessable, it's not even for a game that's coming up. It's just random lines you're learning in the repertoire. I think that you're just not going to get a ton out of it. The way I used to study openings that I thought was effective was I would learn from like a course, and my routine would be the following, which I think was useful. I would watch one or two opening videos a day. I would then put the info into like my opening file in ChessBase, either while I'm watching the video or what I would do. And I think our friend Grandmaster Avitek from ChessMood, I think he mentioned this as well. I would like watch the video without taking notes and just try to pay like really strict attention to it. And then after it was done, I would then input everything I learned or as much as I remembered into the file and then go back to the video if I forgot stuff. But I, you know, just try to like be very focused. But then every day I would then like play games in the lines that I was learning. So it was like very active. It wasn't just trying to like drill lines. It was more just like learning the position. So I would just like get some knowledge about a position and then try to play games, analyze those games. And then as I played those games, that's when I would actually try to like learn the theory, because I would mess up on move six, learning some new opening. And then I'm like, oh, I guess I have to play this move. Right. And then next time I, you know, make that one move and then just keep it going. So the pitfall is that people just spend a ton of time, yeah, trying to like memorize stuff ahead of time. Like, oh, what if they play this weird thing? What if they play this weird thing? And I think that's super hard to memorize without like real practical experience to go along with it. And then at lower levels, the lower you go, the less the opening matters. If we can draw from our experience, generally people just kind of play random stuff. It's like both sides. It's like everyone is afraid of the Sicilian. Players as white, they go e4, c5, c3 because they're afraid of the open Sicilian because black has so many options. And then from black's point of view, they're afraid to play the Sicilian because white has so many options. It's like everyone's so afraid. And then everyone's just playing like these random pad lines. And it's fine. It's like, you know, usually by move 5, maximum 10, you get a completely fresh position. No one is just crushing out of the opening. You just get some normal structure. And then both sides play according to the middle game and the end game. So that's where it's like, yeah, for a lot of people, especially the lower you go, the more true I think this is. It's just more important to focus on the more fundamental long-term stuff of chess, the tactics, middle game, strategy, and so on. People always like to make this point that it's like, okay, I study openings because I know I'm going to get this opening, so I should study it. But the truth is, you actually don't know which opening you're going to get. And you definitely don't know which variation you're going to get of whatever particular opening, but you do know that you're going to get a middle game. You do know you're going to have tactics and all this stuff. So it's like, yeah, to me, that's definitely the thing to focus on. My advice, sorry, I know I'm dragging on here, but my advice ultimately is for, let's say, players below a certain point, like 1800, is to only work on openings if they're like actively a problem. Like every game you're getting killed in the opening, like every game the Evans Gambit is just wrecking you, then yeah, you got to learn some Evans Gambit lines. Like that's just it. That's modern reality. But otherwise, I wouldn't like overdo it on the opening study. I don't think you should get ahead of everyone just like trying to do openings all the time. So like only if it's just an active problem for you and you're constantly getting bad positions, then yeah, you got to work on some openings. That's life.
Okay. So there's something that really stood out to me in what you both said, which is that studying openings was easy. Mm-hmm. And that was sort of, you know, a reason why people would just do it if they've got some time. And as soon as I heard that, I was thinking, it sounds like that's perhaps not the most useful way to study openings or to get better at openings. Mm. So I really feel like the work where you're putting in effort is the work that's really valuable, at least for me. And I know this varies some with people, but if I'm not putting in effort, the odds that I'm really learning anything, the length of time that I'm going to remember it is like dropping precipitously. Mm. It's something we've discussed also with the sort of idea of like passively watching videos on YouTube or on chess.com or somewhere, right? Like you can watch hundreds of hours of great videos where grandmasters analyze great games. But if it's too passive, you might not gain much from that activity, right? Which is a super cultured and interesting activity that you could say is improving your middle games, your tactics, your end games, your culture, everything, right? And yet sometimes it just kind of like washes off of you. So when I was hearing that, my thought was like, maybe we should make sure that our approach to opening study includes some like more sweaty work to it. And so it's not just easy, because my first thought when I hear easy is useless. Mm. And so that's my like gut reaction to it, which might be an exaggeration. And so, for example, Kostya, when you say like the Evans Gambit problem where you're getting killed, right? Mm-hmm. So one way to go study the Evans Gambit, if you're getting killed in the Evans Gambit, and I think the classic way that someone might think when you say that is, oh, go look up a reference book, or, you know, go get like a Chessable course, you know, E4-E5 repertoire by Gustafsson or somebody. I don't know if that's right or wrong, but
no, that's good. Yeah, you can also say like, you know, you just Google how to crush Evans Gambit, you know,
how to crush Evans Gambit, and pick the first video on YouTube. But like the way I used to solve that problem long ago would be that I would show the game like the two or to me, by the time I lost two games in a row in an opening, it was a crisis. Probably the first game already, I would go show it to my friend. But let's say, you know, it's two or three games. I would go show it to my friend. I'd be like, look, I've lost like three times in a row to this opening. Like, what do you see in how I'm playing this? And we would sort of discuss together problem solving, like what's the move I'm getting wrong? Why am I getting that move wrong, right? What's the flaw? So this is getting back to the main dojo work around analyzing your games, right? Versus just going and popping a course into my headset or whatever, right? And, you know, some other things, that approaches I've used over time have been like finding some GM game in that opening and trying to understand the move they played and why they played it and so forth, you know, as a way of looking for an alternative to what I've played if I don't have a strong enough friend available who's able to give me feedback on it. But a little bit of like wrestling with the problem is, again, for me, generally going to lead to better retention.
Yeah. As a way of solving the opening. It's a generational thing with the openings as well, because back in the day, what would happen is there's no computer to tell you what was right or wrong. And you would go over these games and you were forced to kind of like find the questions yourself. And even if there used to be this thing called the MCO, you know, Modern Chess Openings, there were other openings books out there, and they would end kind of with an evaluation, and you'd be like, do I understand this evaluation? And there'd be a lot of thinking that you would have to do in that process that was far more active. Whereas now, you know, at a higher level, you're going to have to turn on Stockfish. And then you are going to be responding. You're going to be like interacting with Stockfish. Stockfish will be your external mind. You know, you'll have the database. That'll be another external mind. Or, you know, let's say you get a dojo repertoire. That'll be like a little rubric for you to follow. Or you go to Chessable again, just a rubric for you to follow. And you're so far less active than it used to be. And I don't know if that's necessarily a bad thing. It's something maybe necessary.
You can get like answers saying, much faster and better answers. You can get
much better, better, yeah. But much better answers, but you're not like doing sweat work at all.
Right. When
you're
doing do you actually know those answers, you know, 2 weeks later? That's kind of my question, right. Which probably depends person by person, but.
Yeah. There was a kind of romance too. I just wanted to give a shout out to the old times. There was a romance about old time, opening study, especially let's say with Fischer and Kasparov, where, you know, they were really diving deep with their own minds into these positions and coming up with these incredible ideas, many of which the computer will now say are unsound. But if you met them on the board, you were just toast. You know, it was just like amazing, you know. And now, of course, what's actually happened, and I just want to give a shout out to the computers. A lot of people are saying that chess is dead or yada, yada, and because of openings. And I firmly disagree. And what's actually happening is the computer is showing us more and more new opportunities. And every version of the computer shows us new and new things. So, for example, Stockfish 16.1 just showed up. I'll probably download it at some point soon. It will show me new things that 16 didn't. So it's like, oh, right, you know, there's another aspect of the passive learning that can go on, right? The new machine comes on, you can use different machines, you can have more intense hardware behind the machines, you know, you could just go crazy with it. But it's not an active, it's no longer an active process.
Yeah, the engines, I mean, I don't think David will want to hear this, but the engines have just gotten in so strong. There are
Yeah.
just fewer and fewer positions where like human evaluation is more correct than what the engine
Oh, I know that.
is
I
saying.
know that. The question is, am I going to remember the stuff, Ghosty? It's not like I don't doubt the power of the machine, right? But what Jesse was just saying, I was like, oh, somebody could feel like I learned all my openings, but 16.1 came out. I have to go check
You gotta
every
go
single line
again.
I
You gotta
have and
go
see if
again, Mouse.
16.1 agrees with the work I did with 16. That's where I get that, you know, the danger of falling down a rabbit hole. Are you really doing it because you enjoy it, right? Or is somebody doing it because they're in
Yeah.
some fear zone?
No, I mean, I definitely don't think that's relevant for anyone below like the professional level. Yeah, where I think we're in agreement there. That certainly is kind of way too hardcore. But as Jesse was saying, actually, there is more to it. You know, it's like a lot of inspiration with the openings. Like openings are a part of people's identity. I remember reading Shirov's book Fire on Board, and he would write about like preparing certain openings for certain tournaments and being ready, because he would play all these super sharp systems like Botvinnik Semislav and all this stuff, and he would know people are studying his games, and it's like, yeah, I had to find an improvement over my game with Sveshnikov in 1991, you know, and this thing. And it's like, I remember reading that and just being like, wow. I mean, and it's just like months of work, you know, preparing all this stuff, and you take pride in your lines, and you're ready to defend it over the board. I totally get that. Actually, yeah, for me, like playing the King's Indian, even though my results I think are not the best, it's like super fun, and it's like my territory. You know, this is my opening, my ground. It's like I really enjoy that. Actually, I think that's cool. So even though I think we all generally agree, I think Ben Johnson does too. It's like, yeah, openings, it's not going to be the best, most fastest way for someone to get better. For me, like if it draws someone in and gives people like a weapon to use and they have more fun to play chess, like some is good, but yeah, don't let it consume all of your time. That would be my thing. Don't be the player that's like trying to learn a bunch of new gambits and like trying to prepare a different opening for every game. I think that's way too much. Find one or two openings that you really connect with. Study them a lot. I think studying model games is the best way to really get in touch with an opening. Play it a bunch of times in training games, and yeah, that's how you do it.
Let me just put out something there. So, one of the things he says in bold print is players rated below 1500 who are looking to maximize their chess improvement should not spend more than 20% of their time studying openings. And one of the things I'll just say, no, that's already way too much at 1500. But one of the things that I think is so confusing for people out there is like, well, you know, it's like the pros are doing it, so I should be doing it. And it's kind of like, you know, when a lot of guys, I used to ride bikes, you know, and a lot of guys would be like, oh, I need that fancy bike, you know, but it's such a very small gain, especially if you're overweight a little bit and you're trying to ride the bike. It's not going to help you, you know. So that's a very similar thing. Anyways, I just wanted to get you guys' response on two quick things, maybe before we jump to the blitz. One is, does that strike you as 20% for 1500 is ridiculously high? And then number two is, what is your gut intuition of all the studying out there that's being done? How much of it is openings? Of like, imagine like the global amount of studying being done from all the way from professionals to very just beginners.
Do you count playing as part of your studying
No,
time? Like
I
people are
wouldn't
playing,
count playing.
if people are like sparring or like playing
Sparring is a
practice
little
games,
differently, but yeah.
right? Because I feel like, you know, opening study in a certain way is a problem, but I think sometimes it may be exaggerated because I feel like if people spend a lot of time on all sorts of other things as well, you know, playing games, which I think is like a critical activity. You know, clicking through their games, studying tactics. But learning the classics, but all of these different things, Jesse, can be done in an easy way, and they can probably all be done in a hard way too, right? So to me, the important thing is almost not even like, are you studying openings or are you studying end games or are you doing this or that? It's like, are you doing this in like an effortful way where you're training your mind and where you're remembering the knowledge you're acquiring? And are you doing it in a way that's fun? If it's either fun or, hard and useful, then I think it can be good, whether it's an opening or something else.
Okay, Kosi, David didn't answer my question, so I'll ask you, buddy. So I'll ask
Apologies.
you. Of all the global studying being done, how much of it is openings? And is 20% for a 1500 way too high?
Okay, so for the global thing, I think puzzles is the big one. I think puzzles is the biggest thing. If we take all the people in the chess that are doing any kind of studying, I think puzzles is the easiest thing to get into. Because I don't think Chessable is actually that popular like worldwide. And outside of Chessable, it's not like that simple to just start like training openings. But puzzles is super easy to get into because every site has puzzles and there's so many apps. So I would think puzzles is probably the big one, especially for lower levels. But for
There's
higher
something new when
levels,
I
I
was.
think openings is like 99%. And actually, I think the higher you go, the closer it gets to, not 99%, but close. I think it gets closer and closer because they just do openings all the time and just study new lines. But I don't know, it's still useful for players because a lot of these top guys, I think the way they do it is obviously they use engines, but they also look at lines a lot over the board and they analyze it themselves and they try to get a feeling for the position and then they'll check it against the computer, like whatever they were analyzing. So they get some analytical training from that as well. So it's not, I wouldn't say that's like, okay, only opening work in a sense.
Yeah, here's one thing I know, Jesse, like some
Oh wait,
years
the other question.
back.
Sorry, the 20% for, I don't know. I like never measure how much time I'm spending on each chunk of the game. 20% doesn't seem crazy to me for 1500.
I think at some point more than half of chess books published were on the opening, Jesse. So that gives you some sense of what the percentage is of
It's
where
true.
people have spent their time historically, right?
Very popular.
But then we don't know for sure if they're reading them and so forth, And then that gets at the question, is it actually easy? Is it actually fun, or is it something where they feel like I need to know this to be able to play, and then they don't finish the book because it's not actually fun. So it doesn't fully answer it, but I don't think it's 70 or 80% or anything horrifying like you were thinking. I think it's probably something like 30 to 40%.
By the way, of the 1,322 hours that I have logged since doing the Chess Dojo little time breakdown thing, I got 13% openings, 13, within 168 hours out of that. So there you go as a breakdown.
Okay, I got a question for you guys. So, what level do you think people should start spending more time into openings? For
My
me,
time on the opening is 10%, very close to Jesse's.
no, but what rating I'm saying should you start ranking it up? And I
So like, I think
generally.
people should start working on like opening principles and thinking about the moves that they played in their openings anytime, right?
So yeah, I'm referring specifically to like building a repertoire and like looking at opening books and starting to have that kind of approach to your opening.
I'm very happy with where it is in the dojo training program. So that's basically my answer. Like it should start around 1200 as basically like 1% of your time. And that's just like, it's just a taste. It's just starting to know that that's a thing.
Just the taste.
And it really should only be starting to ramp up to a significant percentage, kind of as we do it, but around 16, 17, 1800, it starts to accumulate.
That's what I was asking. I think for me, like about 1800, that's when I personally got started to get serious. Actually, I'd say it was after that, but maybe 1900, 2000, when I started to get really serious about my openings. But that was a different time. And I would say, like, as now compared to back then, it's very different because nowadays people can prepare for you a lot easier. As soon as you play a tournament, your games are going to be in the database. There's like opening tree now, and there's like so many more courses. Back then, you know, people would just play the same repertoires over and over again, and it was pretty straightforward. So it wasn't necessary to study as many openings.
Like if somebody prepared for you, the quality of the answers they could bring to the game would not be 3,600, right? They could maybe find one or two GM games in a related line and have like an idea in mind. And that would often not be as good as the extra experience you had in the opening that you'd played hundreds of times. So like when Jesse and I were starting out, for sure, if you tried to prepare for somebody in an opening you didn't play and that they did play, the quality of your idea was rarely going to outweigh their knowledge and understanding of their own opening.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. Okay, cool. Let's move to Blitz. Right?
Okay.
We can come back to it if there's something Kosi wants to add.
But we had another topic on the openings, right? Which was how should one work on their openings? We've touched on it a bit.
Yeah, I think we've talked about it. I mean, I'll just sum it up. Sorry, left for a sec. I'll just sum it up. I mean, I think studying model games is the best thing to do.
Okay.
And playing a lot of games, sparring, playing a lot of Blitz. I think that's the best.
Well, that's a good segue then. To a talk good about segue,
because I also agree. I think the sparring system of logging a bunch of games in your opening is a really good way. I've been working on Kosti's King's Indian repertoire before I went on vacation, and I'm going to take it back up now. You know, I looked at his repertoire, then I tried to see how much of it I remembered, and then I just started logging games in it, and then, you know, going through the game afterwards.
We'll see if it works for you, because the repertoire really represents my approach to opening, especially something like the King's Indian, where I think if you look at the content, I mean, there's a bunch of exercises, a bunch of like positions, and some model games. So it's like 75% of stuff that isn't just here's the move to play in this position. In this position, yeah. You go h6, or here you go a6. Which I think, okay, especially for the King's Indian, it's so much more important to know. I think you could already play the King's Indian at a decent level just based on your existing experience with it, but. Yeah, maybe you can learn some fresh ideas as well.
Yeah, but I'm probably like 21 to 2200 in the King's Indian just as a beginner of it. And, you know, hopefully with your course, I can get that up to like 23 to 2400.
Yeah.
And I think one of the ways people actually go down the Blitz rabbit hole is that, and this certainly happened to me, and it was an enjoyable rabbit hole, but was like, I'm going to play Blitz with the rationalization that I am studying my openings this way. And then you can, and back in the day, you know, what I would do is I would build the file and then somebody played some move in a Blitz game. And then I would like use that as an experience to either remember what I was had in the file or to like, you know, do more in the file. And of course, you know, what actually ends up happening is, you know, most of the games are kind of random, and then the vast amount of time you're actually doing it, you're just blitzing down to the end in some, you know, some ridiculous blitz pop 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 thing. But that is what we just say, that is a very traditional way. I say traditional because it's been going on for at least 30 years where GMs and IMs have been using Blitz to train their openings. That is a very common way for people to be doing opening study. It's enjoyable. And then we kind of have to talk like, is this actually killing their chess and maybe their openings too? But let's just say that's a very common way for people to be learning their openings.
Yeah. Okay. Really important to differentiate that. It would like it, with Blitz, I think it has to be intentional. I think that's the big thing. And there's a couple of good examples in the book, actually, of how to do this. But yeah, what often happens for me when I, let's say I do have a new opening and I'm generally like, okay, I just want to play a couple of Blitz games and I want to check after every game. I'm going to check the line and try to learn from it. But the problem is, okay, you play a game you win or you lose, your opponent offers a rematch, you're like, okay, I don't want to be a jerk, so you play the second game. Then maybe you lose, and you're like, normally that would be, if you're disciplined, you're like, all right, that's it, let me go check the openings we played. I played one game with white, one game with black. But sometimes, like, okay, the opponent played some bad line, and you're like, let me crush this guy while he's still willing to play. Let me farm him. Take his points. Because he's playing. This has happened to me many times. And then it's never, like, I'll check the games later. You know, let me play 10 games. I'll take his points. Then I'll check the games later. Right. And then you just you lose sight of it. So a better way to do it is to either set it up so that you know the person you're playing, and you both understand that this is a sparring session. So you're going to discuss after each game. The opening. So that's, I think, just the most effective. What Ben mentions in the book, my friend Alex King started doing this a lot. I think others do too, is you just kind of, you make a game out of it. So you pretend like you just set a limit on the number of games that you play. So you're like, I'm going to play a 9-round blitz event. In reality, you're just playing 9 blitz games against the pool. But in your head, it's like round 1, round 2, 9 games. You end after 9 games. You analyze all your games at the end like it was a serious tournament. You can track your performance, whatever. And it's just a fun thing because it puts a limit on it. It makes you serious about the games because you only have 9 games. And then you obviously have to analyze the games afterwards if you're being, you know, genuine with it. And it prevents you from playing for 3 hours and going on a binge and then not learning anything with that time. So I think there are ways to kind of like, but you have to be, again, I think you have to be really intentional about what you're doing.
And the other thing that I think is very confusing about what Kosi just said is, back in the day when people were doing this on like ICC, there were hidden accounts, secret accounts, and you could keep your games kind of hidden. And now if you are, what's happening is like you get a lot of people then playing Title Tuesday, and then you have a choice. Are you going to play your top repertoire? Are you going to have a B repertoire? And my experience is players are generally not playing their top openings, and they're kind of be foolish if they did because they'd be so easily searchable. And so they're playing a bunch of B repertoire games. You know, some, and they're playing like blitzy stuff.
Blitz
like the Stafford Gambit's great in blitz, dude. So you got all these blitzy things that if you're going to do it, that's what ultimately it kind of turns into. So that's the other trick that I just find so hard. Also with our opening sparring, like David wants to do opening sparring, but then we have to go to a secret account and then this whole thing, you know, so it's like, so it's really problematic. It's just another barrier that makes it harder to do real blitz study for your openings.
True.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, opening tree is a real thing. I think this is more of a problem for, let's say, OTB tournament players. If you're worried about people prepping for you, then you definitely have to be a little bit conscious about what you play if your online account is well known. I think most players, they just have a second account that is not public or doesn't have their name attached to it that they can use if they want to try out a new opening or they don't want to reveal their prep or something. The other thing I want to say about Blitz, we talked earlier about how it can be destructive. You got to be really careful with building bad habits in Blitz. Like, I think that's the biggest thing. So, and there's a couple of ways to do this. So number one is bad habits where, like, you know, you don't calculate, you just play fast, you're lazy with the calculation. That, of course, is not going to be good for classical. And as kids, I had the experience many times where, you know, if I played a lot of blitz during a tournament or right before a tournament, it would kind of wreck my performance during the event because I just wouldn't be able to recalibrate. And if you play tons of online blitz, I think the same thing can happen. The other thing is that people often build bad habits in the opening or in openings that they play. Like, what happens is they'll have some random line that they play, like some Sicilian or English or whatever, and then they build up this plan of just whatever, just going like knight a3, knight c2 in every game that they play. And if you ask them why they do it, they're like, I don't know, I just always do this. And they just have like 100 blitz games where they do the same plan in like every position, and sometimes it's good, sometimes it's not good, but they just do it every time. And then they do it in classical games. I've definitely had experiences in the last couple of years where I look someone up on openingtree.com, I look at their chess.com games, I see that they're playing like a weird thing, like every game in some line. like I had this game against this guy who was playing like the symmetrical English as white, and against the setup that I play, every game he was just doing like this like weird thing. And then I played into it, and it's in blitz, and it's like, if you check it with the engine, it's like already better for black. it's like really not good. And he just did it in the classical game, and quickly too. It just like, he spent a couple minutes, he just like walked right into it. So, and that's, I think that's a very common thing. I've definitely done that. I remember one game I played an opening that I played a lot in blitz, and I played it quickly, and I realized like, I've actually never checked this with a computer. I just play this in blitz a bunch of times, and you know, whatever, some games I win, some games I lose. After the game, I looked at it and it's like, this is just bad. This is just the bad line that I play. Just totally like walked into it. And so you have to be very careful if you're just mindlessly, you know, playing games and then not really analyzing after.
That's the going for what's easy, right? It's like, I don't, not only do I not have to think hard, I don't have to think at all if I just do what I'm used to. Yeah. And that's almost like a better deal than thinking hard and then playing a move that might be good.
I mean, yeah, it's the classic struggle. How much you want to win versus how much you want to think.
Yeah. But I can say my own experience with blitz, an experience that's pretty similar to what Kosi referenced, is that when my blitz rating would be relatively high, then my performances in tournaments would be relatively low. And when my performances in tournaments were really good, my blitz rating would be relatively low. I actually could use that as like a counter thing. It was so reliable that would tell me if I was going to do well or badly. And I think it's because there's some kind of recalibration of where do you spend time, what's the thought process, etc.
And yeah, it's a recalibration. Like a different game.
Bad, I mean, for you, just right? Like,
just a completely different people. I mean, it's chess, but it's like when there's no time on the clock, it's very different when there very is.
Yeah.
So,
and I should say one of the things that's surprising or fun about Ben Johnson's book is that whereas the other things, you know, let's say endgame study or learning from the masters and stuff, he kind of waffles a little bit. This one, he's like, oh yeah, no, opening blitz is great. Blitz is great, man, do it. And it's definitely, what's interesting about that, of course, is he's a little bit older, but it's part of this generational shift where since Hikaru never studied the classics and grew up playing a bunch of blitz, even Bullet online, it's now kind of thought of like, oh, maybe it's not so bad to be playing blitz, right? And while I disagree, I want to say a couple things about blitz that are amazing. I don't think it's going to help your openings that much. It might help a little bit. You will also be discoverable. It will be easy to search you out when you do this. By the way, Kostya, the most intense preparation that I've ever seen is in the Dojo Liga between like some 1600s. They do deep dives. They do deep dives on their opponent's openings, dude, because they're all there. And then they turn on the engine and they're just like, dude, they're going to the move 20s and stuff. And it's like engine versus engine. It gets really intense, man. Okay, wait, back to this. So what's going on, right, is that you, as a player, have access to all of these titled players around you, and you can play against them, and you can get the experience of having a wide variety of different opponents. And I can't stress how much this is actually important. So this is my caveat for how I'm gonna say blitz is in some ways great, because you're playing from people all around the world, from every kind of style, every kind of opening, right? And it will be a huge confidence booster for you if you are playing, you're an 1800 and you play some FM and you win. And is it really significant? No, but you know, it's like, oh, I'm in it. I'm in this game. I'm in the tussle here, you know? And so it's a way of connecting the chess world and of connecting yourself to the chess world. And so in that way, I do think that's the most important thing about blitz, is that all of a sudden, like you, before you were isolated with your books and your study, and when you were playing OTB, if you played locally like Proust did and I did for a while, you're just playing the same people, and blitz connects you with this huge cultural thing that's going on there, and you can do it whenever you want.
I'm actually confused on this question right now myself about, you know, can Blitz help you and how? I have this one sort of theory, but it's still very early hypothesis, that there are some people who benefit a lot more from playing Blitz. Like, it's sort of a way of learning that works for some people better than it works for some other people. But that's partly because, and it could totally be wrong, because part of it is my experience is I haven't really gotten better from playing Blitz. You know, I've gotten better from a whole bunch of different things. I can sort of track when it happened. And I really do not learn from my Blitz games. And part of it is, like, even my Blitz games don't get better, much less my classical games getting better from the Blitz. But my Blitz games are no better than they were 20 years ago. And at no point did they ever particularly get better. I struggle with all the same things, lose all the same ways. Don't remember previous Blitz games, you know, the way sometimes I remember classical games, although less and less. But, you know, for a long time, I would remember my classical games and the lessons from them, and I wouldn't remember my Blitz games. So it's possible that there's some way to use your, to play your Blitz games or experience your Blitz games, go into your Blitz games, do something with the Blitz games that is the way to gain so much from it. Because I do think there are some people who've gotten really good from playing Blitz. And maybe I just don't know what that way is, you know, and maybe I could ask somebody who is, who looks like a Blitz learner, right? I could ask a Hikaru or a Nihal Sarin or a Denis Lazovic and be like, how do you play like 1,000 Blitz games and then distill chess strength from that, right? And then do it again over another 1,000 games and even get more better than that. And maybe they could like tell me something and then I could do it in a better way. But right now I'm really quite confused on this point, because I've never really gotten better from my Blitz games, but it looks pretty obvious to me that some people do.
Okay, let me say a couple respond to that. So on the negative side, I'm mostly echoing Kosi here, but I'm gonna just put in my own words. The negative side of Blitz, in my own experience, is that it encourages you to have a superficiality of thought. Okay, so for example, chess is going to be hard anyway, and you're sitting there at the board, and whether you've played a bunch of Blitz or not, your mind will at a certain point be like, I'm exhausted and I'm just going to play the move that comes to mind, the impulsive move. And that's the end of every chess player, is to play the impulsive move. And what are you doing in Blitz? You are playing the impulsive move.
Yeah, in Blitz, you should every single time.
Right? Yeah. So one of the things that's interesting about, say, Hikaru is the guy has so talented. In my experience, he's not actually thinking for that long ever. he's like got the solution even in his longer OTB games. This guy is going to be playing for a chance at the world title in like a month. And in general, my experience is, right, he hasn't studied the classics and he had a cool coach as a dad. And he's got, so he's got like some positional understanding and a very quick tactical mind. And so for him, it's like he's thinking in a way that's different. And this is just to David's question of like, well, why is it that some people not only didn't get hurt by Blitz chess, but apparently it's helped them in some way that's very counterintuitive to old timers like myself and everyone in the American chess scene who watched Hikaru's progress since he was a little kid. No one understood, dude. No one understood. And until Hikaru made it into the top 20, we were all like, wasted talent. What a waste of talent. And honestly, the guys, it continues to confound me. We need to do our own dojo talks on Hikaru, but that now at a much later stage in his career, he's made it to world number 3. It's like, what? No one understands. Anyways.
I'm having deja vu. We definitely talked about this.
We talked about this a little bit, but in any case, times. I'm just saying it could be talked about as its own special topic. And yeah. I just want to say, like, what's going on in what Ben Johnson's saying and what we're talking about Hikaru and others is there is this generational shift. Ben Johnson's actually on board with it. It was kind of surprising. And it is this belief, you know, partly I guess you could say, oh, but it's fun and these other things that are going on, that it's not going to turn you into an impulsive player, right? And the players at the top, whoever makes it to the top, they're not going to be that much of an impulsive player. Nepo's, I think, an example of someone who often makes impulsive moves. But, you know, if you do make it to the top, you're somehow able to pull it back and not make the impulsive move.
Mm-hmm. So on that point, I just want to say, I think there's very few players that got really good by, like, exclusively playing blitz, or, like, blitz was, like, the main thing that they were doing. Mm-hmm. I would imagine they were just doing, like, the classic forms of studying, like maybe solving lots of puzzles, playing lots of tournaments, analyzing those games, you know, and then maybe playing a lot of blitz on top of doing a bunch of those things already. But also, I mean, I think we should keep in mind, like, when we're talking about, like, the vast majority of, like, club players, like adult players, they're not the same as, like, a kid, like, growing up with, like, a million hours, and it's like their brain is a sponge and just, like, absorbing mm-hmm. everything. So it's like, I feel like the deeper thinking is going to be, like, more useful for people. But that being said, for some players, I think blitz, especially OTB blitz, I would say can be extremely helpful, specifically for players that, like, play a lot of online chess. I think they often need just more reps with their hands moving pieces, because that's what we see when players shift from online to OTB. The biggest problem they have typically is that they're not used to playing OTB, they're not used to calculating or the board and all this stuff. So this is where, like, just playing a bunch of blitz games OTB can at least get someone a lot more comfortable with the pieces. Mm-hmm. But that's definitely going to be a different thing than, you know, I think most people think of blitz, they're just you know, playing a bunch of blitz. And guys, we didn't even talk, you know, more than half the people listening to this, guys, play blitz on their phone. It's like, while they're watching. Dude, someone posted a screenshot. It's crazy. They're playing blitz on their phone. So, you know, the image is like a vertical image. And then part of the screen is blocked by a YouTube video. Because when you watch YouTube on your phone, if you switch to a different app, YouTube will be, like, smaller, but the video still plays. So not only are they playing on their phone, they've also got a YouTube video just, like, playing as their playing their game. So, and then this, you know, so this is who we're working with here, right? So we just have to keep that in mind.
Did you recently get mated? Well, it's time to join the Chess Dojo training program. Or maybe you just enjoy this fine content. Give us some money on the Patreon. I need to keep the lights on. And with inflation, it's really hard for Kostya to be buying that avocado toast.
I obviously, nobody got to the top by only playing blitz. They all did other things too. I understand that, you know, and Mitch and Chad, of course, saying we don't know what Hikaru is doing when he's offline. You know, he probably studied chess at some point, right? Like, he must know some of the classics, even though he said he didn't study the classics when he was, like, a 12-year-old kid. At some point, he probably learned some of this stuff, right? But I can say, if you look at some of these players' percent of life on ICC type stat, right, which they used to have on ICC, just the hours on ICC, or if you look now, like, just how many thousand games they've played on chess.com and multiply it by 5 minutes of time, some of these people have literally played so many hours of blitz chess that there's no way they studied as many hours as I did. You can mathematically conclude it, because I was spending, you know, 12 hours a day studying chess with, like, you know, book and board and all that kind of stuff, right? And if they spent 6 hours or 8 hours a day playing blitz, there was just no way they were spending that many hours offline as well. So everybody's doing a mix of things, but for some people, it seems to be a really valuable component. Like, it's definitely brought something to their game.
Right.
Yeah. Well, good for reps, but yeah, long story short, I think you just have to be careful of the drawbacks of blitz and the downsides, which are very real. Especially if people, this has never really been a huge problem for me, but people get really upset with online blitz. Like it actively tilts them in their real life. Right. Like it's like it's like road rage level frustrating.
Yeah, yeah.
Where it's like consumes people. I definitely get it. I mean, I've definitely gotten, like, frustrated, like, angry, you know, like, smash my mouse or, like, whatever, like, for sure. But for some people, it's, like, way worse. I think part of it, number one, I don't care about my online rating because I have, like, an OTB rating that I care more about.
Says so I think the guy that's... who forgot to study his games because he wanted to farm somebody. Doesn't care about his online rating 20 minutes later. Okay.
No, it's fun. I like you got to take the free points if they're on the ground. You got to pick up the free points.
What for if you don't care about the free points? I walk by all kinds of free stuff on the ground that I don't pick up.
What was I saying? I think for some people, yeah, they have to figure out some mental stuff that they have with either competitive play or losing. Because yeah, that's not good. You don't want to be playing chess and then it leads you to like hate yourself or all these negative thoughts. I think that's not good.
Definitely.
Don't hate yourself.
Don't
That
die.
could be our final message. Don't
Yeah.
slam the mouse. Don't hate it.
Don't hate yourself. Don't break your tennis racket if that's your game of choice.
Yeah, no one wants to see that, you know, this man. No one wants to see that. Alrighty, I think we'll call it there. Thanks, folks,
Oh, there, yeah.
for listening. Shout out again to Ben Johnson, Perpetual Chess Podcast, the new book, Perpetual Chess Improvement, for providing a lot of really useful topics to discuss. Thanks everyone for listening. See you guys next time.